You're healthy. Radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
And it's hard to say goodbye, my love. Hard to see you cry, my love. Hard to open up that door when you're not sure what you're going for.
Are we in a game show here? Like, what was this? I'm like, okay, we got my old producers, Habib and AJ Rice here. I'm like, which one of you picked the music to my for my last show? It's like, what is this? I walked in 30 seconds ago because I'm not going to change the way I do business all these years later. I mean, I have to do it at the last second. Otherwise, the magic doesn't come. All right, last show. I don't want to be too maudlin about it, but we have some good guests. Pat Buchanan, Newt Gingrich, Mike Pompeo. Who's he? Craig Shirley, and a lot of other surprises. Apparently a lot of surprises. How you doing, boys?
Shirley.
Doing good. You could have called into the show.
Yeah.
That's been done before.
Well, when I was a little late.
Yeah, just a touch.
Well, the best thing is my staff, they don't let me on my own show when I'm late. Well, what did you say, Lee, all those years ago?
Yeah, no cell phone.
No cell phone.
You would try and call in on the cell phone.
Well, this is I don't know. It's weird. It's a weird thing. I was thinking about, I was talking to Lee earlier, that 4 presidential elections, 3 kids, cancer, a couple of other personal things that we don't have to dwell on, all the political tumult. Of course, the last election, John Kerry dealing with the swift boat mania.
Lurch.
But yet, in a way, and with Lee and AJ here, who are, you know, Lee and I launched a show together on April 29th, 2001.
You were in San Francisco. I was in the studio. Christopher Hitchens was the first guest. This is back before he really hated God. He wasn't sure. He was on the fence. And something happened, and you didn't come on the air.
Well, I was in San Francisco because I had a speech. Who launches a show from a remote location, never having, of course I did.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting in this little, I think it was KSFO. I was sitting in this little room.
A little bunker. Yeah.
And I'm talking to Hitchens, and it actually is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I twirled around in my seat, and there were a bunch of cords connected to some type of console near my feet.
It's a studio, Laura. Well, they have these things.
Yeah, it's a studio.
Right.
And I kicked something off. I guess I kicked something out, or I thought I did, but what I actually did is I hit the cough button underneath. I somehow hit, which means it kills. I can't hear anything.
That's right.
But you guys could hear me, or I couldn't hear, whatever. And so that was the first show.
Yeah, and I was left in the studio, and they're making these hand puppet signals that I should talk, but you didn't know
Kevin Delaney. I told Kevin to call in.
You didn't know what a cough button was because you were such a pro, and I had no idea what the signal for start talking meant.
And yeah, Lee, like Kevin Delaney at Westwood One, he's going like, Lee, talk. And so Lee picks up the New York Post. You heard it, AJ, right?
I've heard the audio. Lee just starts reading the New York Post on
the air. I did what Gordon Liddy taught me how to do. Read the newspaper. That's what he said. It's all it is to talk radio.
Page 6 radio show.
That's right. Actually, it was the aqueduct racing charts.
Yeah, it was like, well, and that. And the 4th race today will be. No, but it was best. And then I was like, oh my God, this is going to be such a disaster. And then my next guest was Gavin Newsom.
That's right.
Who did this thing called Card Not Cash or something. It was a thing in San Francisco where they weren't giving cash out any longer. Oh, Care Not Cash. They weren't giving cash out any longer to homeless people because they realized, gee, they got more homeless people giving cash out. But he came on, and this was when, I'll talk about a long time ago in many ways. I mean, would Gavin Newsom come on my last show? I actually felt like calling him saying, just come on. But the world is so polarized now. Like back then, we had John Kerry on.
Frank Rich used to come on and do stuff once a week. The New York Times theater critic who became a political pundit and then ultimately,
hated us.
Come on to talk about anything.
So it was John Kerry, obviously John McCain. Well, and another person we used to have on early on, who's now the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And we will play some of that. Well, I think the best one, the first one I have is from 2002. And that was after I met him for the first time and we had lunch. And so I said, you got to come on the show. And so he said, okay. So he just called in and he actually doesn't, he kind of pretty much sounds the same as he sounds now. Not really any different, but that was 15 years ago.
We were all over The Apprentice. We knew what it was.
Oh, we knew what The Apprentice
and
was.
And we had him on Monday to do the roundup of who got fired and why.
Right. AJ, any thoughts?
Well, I would say that...
And AJ, give us the years that you were with the show.
Okay, so 05 to roughly 09 into 10.
Okay, so but tell us how you were hired.
Well, I was basically a glorified intern that sort of evolved into... you know, Habib. I mean, really. I got taken under both of your wings
How old were you?
25.
And he looked like he was 11.
Yeah.
At the time.
Oh, yeah. AJ had this
walked
little
in.
Hair.
Habib's like, what do you borrow your dad's suit? Philadelphia? What's the matter with you?
Come on. Jersey says to Philly, hey, are you doing?
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? But AJ was an intern, and then the next thing you know, you were...
He was running the place.
You were helping me get clothes for the Maggie Thatcher lunch.
That's right. That's right. I've got that story ready to go.
Okay.
I would say that Trump was calling in early on, and he loved doing radio at the time. But there is somebody else in the administration who didn't call. We called in sometimes, but he was a prominent fill-in host from time to time. The most famous fill-in host in Laura Ingraham Show history, which is
Mike Pence.
That's right, the vice president. Who was on radio for years in Indiana.
Yeah, so. And he was a congressman, but he was still in Congress when he filled in.
Yep.
I said this to him. I saw him recently. I said, I fired you because you tanked my ratings.
That's right. That's right.
He did not.
A much better vice president.
Yeah, he did not have the snap. I said, no, AJ, no. You got to get someone else to fill in.
By the way, that's the last time he's been fired.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you made me sit next to him. I'm like, what's happening here?
Yeah. No, I'm like, come on, man. That's just crazy. But. Lee, you have your own My American Stories now all across the country. So Lee stayed in the radio business and expanded it and did a lot of stuff with Salem. Still does a lot of great stuff with Salem Radio. But we were talking last night, Lee, and the power of the story and the power of that connection with people, an immediate connection on radio is unlike anything else. You know, we're launching a podcast with Podcast One in January, which I'm really looking forward to. But it's different. I mean, it's not going to be this. This is very organic and it's immediate. You have an immediate feedback.
This is jazz, and that's sort of classical. You're not going to get the feedback loop, but you're going to get a different kind of feedback with stories. It's just going to be a different universe.
Yeah. And AJ flew, little birdie flew out of the nest and started his own PR firm. And...
That's right. And, you know, a lot of prominent people that have appeared on The Ingraham Show. Everyone from Corey Lewandowski and David Bossy to Judge Jeanine Pirro working with the Federalist Society.
Well, and when you do that, you just realize that all the stuff that we did all those years ago, I mean, for all the people, and we did have things thrown across the studio on occasion, but it really is a family. Putting on a show every day with the ups and downs and the stress and the fun but it is really like a family. It sounds
absolutely.
And Lee did a lot of stuff in the theater and lived in New York for many years, and it is like it's a show that. Well, now it's closing, but it's a show that kind of just goes on and on and on. It's every day. It's a lot.
And it's your life. And we brought the life into the show, which is what was so much fun, particularly your dogs and everything. I mean, for better or for worse, everything.
Yeah, everything. All the stuff. I remember when I was on the phone, I remember Lee, you were in the other room, and AJ, I think you were there in 2005, and I was on the phone with my doctor, and I was just calling because I had gotten a checkup. And she said, I have some bad news. And this was the doctor who, God bless her, said, oh, you know, you can just observe this. We'll just keep an eye on this lump. It's nothing. And then, I said, why don't you do a biopsy? A couple of days later, she goes, I said, let me guess. I'm on the phone in the radio studio. Let me guess. It's breast cancer. Yes, it actually is. I said, great. And that was it. And then it was.
What's the next segment?
Yeah, what's the next segment? Are we doing it now? But, you know, yeah, we would rush to, I mean, it's just weird. You just do what you have to do. And it's like, I just happen to have had a radio show. But without these guys, without James, without Mike, Lee, Matt Fox. We have great great interns who have gone on to do amazing things.
A lot of them.
Jeff Reimers, and he couldn't come on because he's now with the FBI, so he's like, I can't. But he was my first intern with Lee. Didn't stop Comey from talking. Yeah, didn't stop Comey. Thank you. He's gone on to do amazing things. Tom Elliott is running Grabian. He started this great website that compiles and markets different sound and has its own content. And, you know, Max Koenig went on to do great. I mean, all these kids just it's really amazing. Like, I was kind of in my head doing like the interns, hundreds of people. I mean, really.
Joe Volano, who used to sell you Christmas trees.
That's right.
He's like a VC for Morgan Stanley, Smith Barney out in Silicon Valley. Brian Preston went on to do Republican Party of Texas communications.
Yeah, I guess. And good. Just good people. Julia Hahn is at the White House.
Yep.
running a lot of the PR for Trump and all the communication stuff for Trump. So she's doing great work. But it's weird. But this really was a great training ground for me. And listening to the early shows with no experience. And Lee and I, so our show was on from 7 to 10 p.m. from 2001 to 2003. And I what did I say? Lee, I'm not a night person. I am not a freaking – I got to get on in the morning. I'm not a night person. And when Lee and I went to sell the show initially to our friends at Westwood One, we went in with Joel Hollander and these guys. And I said, well, we want to do a radio show. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, we want to – what is it about? Well, you know, I don't know. It's just going to be about, you know, the stuff we talk about. And I think he was like, what?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, he didn't quite.
You remember one guy?
We won't
say his name, Benatier.
Benatier.
He said, what's your show about? What's your ist?
What's your ist?
You got to be the funniest. You got to be the sexiest. And you said, we're the smelliest.
We're the smelliest show.
We're the smelliest.
But there's like all the stuff that people say you can't do. I'm like, we can do that. I mean,
including, by the way, that no woman will make it in this business because, well, women don't listen to talk radio and they don't want to have a woman yelling at them or talking to
right.
them. We heard this over and over again. And, of course, we then pointed out that if you have a bunch of old, bald, white guys talking on the air, and by the way, no disrespect to all the great old, bald, white
guys.
Yeah,
like you,
I'm
Habib.
I'm one. But it would be nice to have a woman talking. And then women, of course, followed through and listened. And then we ended up championing Michelle Malkin's career and all these other
right.
people's careers
right.
that we wouldn't have otherwise maybe been booked. As a result. So
and the recount in – not the recount, the late and scary election night in 2004, we were on WABC from 6 to 8 p.m. So I was doing the morning show from 9 to noon and then doing a little bit for WABC. And I remember that night when people were ready to throw themselves off a bridge because they thought Kerry was winning. Remember the early returns where Kerry was going to win? And Bill Kristol actually, God bless him, this is in the old days when Kristol, you know, was – more of a Republican or conservative, yeah. And he said, there's no way Kerry's going to win. No, and Peggy Noonan wrote this great piece saying, Limbaugh and Hannity and Ingram got us through that night because we thought this – and people were freaking out. They were freaking out on air. I was like, I wouldn't – don't – it's going to be okay.
Waiting on Ohio, I believe,
yeah,
right?
Don't – it's going to be okay. So anyway, we have a lot of reflections. Mike Pompeo is going to stop by, Newt Gingrich, Buchanan – and a lot of old favorite moments from shows past.
Well, we got to bring this to you. I'm surprised Fox didn't even get this tape, and we had to be very clever about how we got our special stringer in the big Kerry rally. He had a great turnout, and you know he's trying to retool his message and trying to, you know, get the whole campaign back in order. I mean, it's just a disaster for them right now. So what do you do? Well, you got to get young people out to vote.
Here we go. I'll begin. You can join in later. Here we go. What sound are we extra fond of?
W.
It's not any trouble, you know it's a W. When you hear woo, 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 woo.
It all comes down to one letter.
What is
W? George W. Bush. Now, what do you think that W stands for? That W stands for wrong. Wrong direction. Wrong choices. Wrong priorities.
I sense a new momentum building in the Kerry campaign.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Don't forget to remember me.
CNN, who do they go? Who are they going to go to try to outdo the Hannity and Combs and get the ratings? They're going to go to Larry King.
We got Anna Nicole Smith for the hour.
We'll pull the camera back a little. Stand up and let's see how you look. Not bad. Oh, you're going to do a walk.
Okay, as much as we want to laugh at Larry King, okay, this guy is a legend in broadcasting.
Give me a typical day. What do you eat? Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Example, typical day. Breakfast.
Look out, Tim Russert.
Okay, we're up to lunch.
Move over, Mike Wallace.
What do you have, like, for dinner?
You had to wipe the drool off of Larry King's mouth.
Oh, man, take a look at my life.
I mean... Well, that was, I almost said both are dead. Larry King's not dead. He's still alive.
He does infomercials 24-7
on
television.
Yeah, I see him all the time. He could not be nicer.
He's a lovely man.
He was always so great. He came on the show often.
What does Lee do here?
Yeah, what do you do? Are you sleeping together? What are you doing?
You're a producer? Like, okay. The producer, that.
Oh,
right.
That's right. Remember when he would come in before he taped his stuff at CBS in
the early days,
yep. Remember? And he did say never give up radio. Sorry, Larry, after 17 and a half years, I got to... But that's wild.
That's right.
That's really wild. Oh my gosh, poor Anna Nicole Smith. But that, I miss that. I miss that show though. That Larry King show was a good show.
I miss that show.
Charlie Rose is gone. Larry King's. There's no one who does that kind of show really on television. Let's go to Jim in Florida. Jim, line one. Last show. Hard to believe. Jim.
Yeah, well, I've been listening to the show for years. I'm gonna miss you. But one thing that popped in my head about your show. Was you remember the dog you had named Troy, and he had gotten out of your yard, and you were running around frantically looking for him, and you were talking on the phone, but you were on the air, and you were crying, and you had us crying, and that's just one of the many memories I'm gonna have.
Oh my God, everybody remembers the Troy. I was really a wreck. That was a nightmare. 3 days, then he died like 2 weeks later.
APB for Troy. Old Jed Babin filling in at the time.
Oh, that's right.
Brad Feldman found him in some yard.
No, yeah. No, it was a woman actually kidnapped him for the ransom, for the reward.
Some speculated it was a ratings stunt.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's right.
Christopher Steele was seen running from the back of the yard. Bruce Orinelli had put
the
up the signs.
Took him.
Yeah, exactly. Jim Comey was seen with a leash. Prancing through the neighborhood. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Show. We're going to talk to Pat Buchanan. Oh, my gosh. Try to do the math on how many shows approximately 17 and a half years is and how many hours that is with vacation kind of worked in. Try to figure out how many hours that is. That's a lot of time. All right. Well, we're going to talk to Buchanan. Gingrich is going to be with us. Pompeo. We got Habib, AJ Rice, other friends and family calling in. You're all my family, extended family. Remember, you can follow me on Podcast One. Of course, Fox News every night, 10 p.m. We have a great show on tap. Tomorrow, we're heading to West Palm Beach, Florida with Turning Point USA. We're going to do an event with Charlie Kirk and thousands of young conservatives. Looking forward to that in the show live from West Palm. Or we're going to do it. I'm not sure if it's live tomorrow, but it's going to be from West Palm Beach. Going to have a great show. Stay there.
Never know what you're going to get on the Laura Ingraham Show.
Joining us now, my friend, Pat Buchanan. Pat, I was quite surprised to see you. I guess, what were you, in the fourth row in that Live Earth concert?
The last concert I went to was Ricky Nelson at the Carter Barrett Amphitheater.
I don't even want to know when that was.
I tell you who I did used to see and had a mild crush on was Joan Baez. I used to see her out at Washington University. Me and my buddy Denny Walsh, the Pulitzer Prize winner, we were chasing communists out there. And they had all these, they were all out there, but she came in to sing, and it was, and she was out at Washington University. I was just transfixed with her voice when she was very, very young. It was unbelievable, you know, and I did say the devil's got the best tunes here.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Well, I think Pat Buchanan probably on the show more often than anyone else, other than maybe Byron York, a few other dear friends. And I've known Pat. I met Pat when I was 18 years old,
wearing knee socks, I kid you not, preppy days in the 80s, coming down from Dartmouth College to interview him at his home in Virginia. I'd never been to Virginia before, and I drove all the way with Dinesh D'Souza, Keeney Jones, and, you know, doing this thing for the Dartmouth Review back then, and I was a freshman, and we drove all the way down, never seen Washington, never, and I met Buchanan, and it was like, I looked around his house, all his photos of Reagan and Nixon and beautiful book and library, and I thought, wow, people actually live like this. And all these years later, just a few years later on my last radio show, it's fitting that Pat Buchanan is back. He's the godfather of really modern day, correct, populist, more nationalist conservatism, and he joins us now. Pat, how you doing, brother Pat?
Doing fine, and thanks for the introduction and calling the memories of Pat and Joan Baez.
Pat, that has to have been, I'm not kidding you, that has to have been like a 2003 or something, 2004, that interview with you. It's a long time ago, obviously. But it's interesting to end this show on at a time where the debates that we've been having in the conservative movement all the way, you know, since you started in it in the 60s all the way to today, it's kind of all come full circle. This news yesterday about the president pulling out of Syria, cheered by so many of us because, you know, what are we doing there? 2,000 troops after ISIS has been destroyed. But the howls from the military-industrial complex, Pat, you could hear them all the way over to McLean from Capitol Hill.
Well, you sure could, and what Trump has done with this jolting decision, apparently against the advice of Pentagon State and Bolton, his war cabinet, if you will, is really set the cat down among the pigeons. He's got the debate going in the nation as to when, if ever, we're going to get out of the Middle East wars, the forever wars in which we were marched by Bush 2 and by Barack Obama. And he has said we're going to start bringing the troops home from Syria right now. And there's 2,200 or so in there. That's the low figure I've seen. Others have mentioned more. But there's no doubt about it, Laura, that there's going to be consequences from the great American withdrawal from all these interventions around the world. And the fundamental basic point is that the United States is not strong enough and it doesn't have so many vital interests that it can fight, you know, half a dozen forever wars in the Middle East along with contain Russia and containing China. Both of those policies, all of those policies. And so we're going to have to pick and choose. And Trump has ignited a tremendous national debate.
Well, and Adam Kinzinger, who's a congressman, a Republican congressman, his big-time interventionist, said this today.
It seems like the president, you know, this bromance with Rand Paul that just got completed somehow. They played golf enough, and Rand with his very out-there foreign policy that's actually libertarian and has nothing to do with republicanism but is masquerading as a Republican, somehow got in the president's ear. And instead of the president going in front of his foreign policy team that actually knows this stuff, he just says, hey, it's done. We're going to do it. We're going to pull everybody out. Rand's excited, you know, Laura Ingraham's excited, but the rest of people that actually understand how the world works, the rest of us are pretty confused.
The rest of us who thought we were going to be greeted as liberators in Iraq and would be out in 14 months and
right.
Trillions of dollars later.
Rest of us who understand how the world works. Now, I don't think Adam Kinzinger was one of them, but that was the elite, the establishment, and the others who marched us into Iraq and were going to create a major democracy in the heart of the Middle East that's going to be a model, who marched us into Libya, who took us into Syria, ignited that war, who tried to build Iowa out there in Afghanistan, and who got us involved in a war for what reason in Yemen, I do not know. But the chickens have all come home to roost for these folks. And the elites that got us into the war, I understand now they realize that Trump is beginning a pullout from these wars, and the consequences are going to be, many of them are unknown, and many of them could be unpleasant. But the United States of America simply cannot sustain the kind of foreign policy they want, where you've got allegedly got troops in over 100 countries.
Now, and Pat, they always act like it's 1995 still or something. We're not running these massive deficits where we don't have $20 trillion in debt. Those days are over. We decided to blow all this money in globalization and blow all this money, trillions, on these wars. China didn't fire a shot in Afghanistan or Iraq, and they're just, you know, just chalking up the cash.
Well, how has China suffered by not having been involved in any of these wars in which we're involved? Nothing. They just ignored this and let the Americans come in and do it all. And the decisions taken, I mean, what has happened is basically you can go all the way back to the late respected Poppy Bush, and the idea that the United States could, after the end of the Cold War, which we had made enormous sacrifices and cost ourselves greatly to win that, we went basically out to remake the entire world in our own image. And we got into one war after another, after another, after another. And Donald Trump is president because he said, we can't afford all this. We got to start looking out for ourselves. And what we got now is the most jolting decision he has made. But he's really going to ignite a national debate on this thing, on how long and how much we should spend to try to protect some of these countries, or try to basically fight every war for all the various countries in the Middle East.
Joe Scarborough today, another former pal of yours, Pat, was also speculating that there may be other motives in this pullout from Syria.
This is foreign policy welfare for Vladimir Putin. He can't even believe his luck. Or, I'm sorry, maybe he can. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is connected to something that none of us know about.
Well, let me talk to that. Look, Vladimir Putin is backing Assad in Syria. Assad, Iran, Russia, and even Hezbollah, whatever you say about it, they are Shia, basically. And the Al-Qaeda and ISIS detest and despise Shia, and they like killing them more than they like killing us. So the folks who are in control in Damascus now and those who back them are the ones who are going to have to deal with the Syrian problem of ISIS after the Americans leave. So I don't think this is of great benefit to Russia, frankly. The very fact that we were battling ISIS and still are, for I'm sure for a certain period of time, is of great benefit to Assad, because we're fighting one of his principal enemies.
Yeah, again, the hatred of Trump, Pat, is so visceral, and it's on the surface everywhere.
Well, I think, you know, lately, there's a sense you get of the feeling that there's blood in the water.
Yeah.
You get that in the last couple of weeks, et cetera, with all the different investigations going on in the media every morning, something new and some breaking news. And I agree with you. I mean, there's a detestation. There's an effort not only to break and bring down Trump, but I think to disgrace him and discredit his election as having been illegitimate and stolen. And then basically to put him in jail as some kind of criminal. And it's visceral and it's visible. I mean, you can ask the people, there's real hatred toward the man out there.
Mm. Well, and is it more his tonality? Is it who he is, the way he speaks?
I think it's all of those things and more.
Or is it the policies? In other words, if they successfully drive him out of office, it's not like we're going to go back to the military interventionism of the Bushes. That's never going to work again.
Never. I mean, coming back. And also,
never.
In the future, because of what's going on in the border, if you don't stop, I mean, what is clearly an invasion again from the south, from Africa and the Middle East and Latin America, all moving north into the successful countries of the West and expanding their welfare states and really moving in and changing and altering their culture and character and the populations. I think if you don't do that, this is the existential threat to the West. It is not Russia. I mean, in the Kerch Strait building a bridge. That is the great existential threat to the world, I think, the Western world. And there is disagreement with that on the part of the left in this country. There is opposition to his all of his policies on in foreign policy of bringing down the American empire, ridding us of all these commitments around the world, stopping these wars. I mean, it threatens and challenges every aspect of what these folks believe ought to be done and what they've been doing. In addition to that, there's the personal thing. They don't like him personally.
Mm-hmm.
And the back and forth has gotten to, I mean, it's almost gotten to, back in the days of Andrew Jackson, people would have been out dueling each other. the way the talk is going now.
No, it's and I do think they believe that somehow once Trump's gone, all the problems that they created with this addiction to globalization and to these cheap Chinese goods and to open borders, like that's going to somehow then work. Well, look at what's happening in France. They bought in completely to globalization and they welcomed all these people there and they hoped it was going to work out and they did the climate change stuff and people are miserable because their standard of living is stalled out or going down. So people will ultimately say no. And then what happens, Pat? Then where do we go?
Well, this is why you can see where we will go by where we are going. If you take nationalism and populism and even individual leaders and rulers rising up to represent the will of the people when it's not represented by the democratic polity that exists there. The movements and the issues and the ideas that created Trumpism are still there. People want their secure borders. They want their own country maintained. They don't want to be bled to death for foreign wars. They realize that they're spending more than they're saving and they're spending themselves into bankruptcy. This is happening all over the Western world, or the United States, and people aren't going to go back to the same old, same old. In the election of 2016, if you take Cruz's vote and Bernie's vote and Trump's vote, the repudiation of the establishment and the elites and what they delivered was massive. That was a utter rejection. And the idea that if they overthrow Trump and climb back into the positions of power and get all the titles they used to have, they're going to be beloved and welcome. And they're deluding themselves.
Yeah, Pat, and then magically the Weekly Standard will reconstitute itself.
No. Somebody drove a stake through that at the crossroads at midnight.
Well, Pat, I have to say, you're going to come on the podcast. So it's not like I'm not going to talk to you anymore, obviously. But I just want to tell you that I think other than Reagan, you've had the biggest sort of philosophical influence on me over the years, and with such grace and poise and wisdom, you've really helped so many people. You've helped me personally just frame things properly and kind of come to terms with where I had kind of bought in on the kind of neoconservative, jump on the military, we love the military, we love the people of the military, incredible, wonderful, amazing people. But that's different from going all gung-ho in all these foreign wars and, only when absolutely necessary should be doing it. So thank you for doing that.
You've done a great job in your career, Lauren. Done a great job on the radio show educating the folks, and congratulations. And I'm sure you're moving on to ever greater heights.
Thank you.
Delighted that we can call you perhaps mildly a protege.
Nah, you bet. You bet, Pat. We're all the way back to those knee socks. Pat Buchanan here on The Laura Ingraham Show.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Dog walking with Lee on the Laura Ingraham Show.
It's disturbing, the thought of Lee with his little spandex shorts walking around Baltimore with his little guinea tee on and walking with those two pugs on the little studded, diamond-studded leash that he has for them, the leather collar.
They wear little Harley hats, too.
Oh, no, they have the pugs with Harley Davidson jackets and hats. I kid you not.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Do the leather collar have spikes, Lee, or is it a smooth collar? Oh, my gosh, Lee, I forgot about that Harley outfit you had, you and Val.
It's, mess with the neighbors. That's what I like to do.
Lee, remember when your house flooded? Like, you had water and Fells Point, right? It was like...
In Baltimore, we had a nor'easter, and it just put my apartment under, put my pugs. They were floating around. It was really something. We saved the furniture. The pugs, we just got some
All money. Right, so when we come back, we're going to talk to Mike Pompeo. We have other special guests. Newt Gingrich is going to call in. AJ is going to remind us of what happened in the first amnesty fight in 2006 with McCain and Lugar and a bunch of others. Okay, so you're going to remind us of that. And Harriet Myers, the big takedown of that nomination, all coming up.
You're healthy. Radio. Addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
We let the good times roll.
We decided we got to bring in all the big guns. And the man who is New York, chairman of Trump, the Trump Organization, I just met him a couple of months ago, and I was not thinking he was going to be so smart and so funny. When I think of Donald Trump, I don't think funny. Donald Trump is a funny man, and he joins us now. Hey, Donald.
Well, we really don't have much of a choice, Laura. You know, we have to be funny. Otherwise, it's a pretty sad life when you get right down to it.
You should have gone into politics. I mean, you are such a diplomat. You glide between these worlds of sort of politics, the culture, the real estate business, the international business world, and I never hear you say a bad thing about anybody.
You really don't?
No, and rarely. I mean, maybe I'm just haven't been known you long enough, but you always manage to give a compliment, totally unlike me.
Well, that's different than most people would think. I'm very happy that you just said that, but I think a lot of people would disagree. Mom, Dad, I just fell in love with a big fat pig named Rosie.
Well, I kind of... He seemed really nice to me, so that's all that mattered back in 2002 when I interviewed Donald Trump. Well, we talked about a lot of things in that interview. I said he should go into politics, be a diplomat. He seemed it. And Lee, he came on a lot, right?
A lot.
Lee Habib is with us, yeah. And of course, AJ Rice. Lee started this with me all those years ago, and
we did important things like track The Bachelor and what was
the
happening
Bachelor,
in The Bachelor,
and The Bachelorette, because
Survivor.
That was,
we did
I thought
that.
He loved me. He was just French kissing 17 people on national television. He loved me. He told me he loved me. Where did I go wrong?
Yeah.
Oh, it's humiliating, completely humiliating. But it got a little personal in this interview.
Do you ever date people who aren't models?
Yes, absolutely.
You do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Lie of the day.
I'm always seeing you with really pretty, incredibly, and it makes me a little bit nervous.
No,
I just can't measure up to all these people.
Yeah, no, the absolute, fact is the, absolutely is. The brain is very important also, you know that.
I'm single, so I'm just trying to get some advice from you. I need dating advice from Donald Trump.
Well,
this is a fact.
Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
You don't have a boyfriend?
No.
As good looking as you are?
I have a yellow Labrador.
When did this all happen? I thought you had a boyfriend.
I don't have a boyfriend.
Oh,
I would have told you if I had a boyfriend. No, I don't have a boyfriend, but I'm actually not
worried
about it.
When was the last time you had a boyfriend, Laura?
May I reserve the answer to that question?
More on-air dating on the Laura Ingraham Show.
No, when was the last time you had a boyfriend? A meaningful boyfriend.
A meaningful, probably a couple years.
When was the last time you had an unmeaningful boyfriend?
Yesterday. Does the parking attendant across the street count?
Right.
Yeah, I think he has a little crush on me. That might work.
That's a very good answer.
Oh, that was wild. I mean, but it was a different era. I mean, you could talk about stuff like that. It made it more fun.
It did.
But do you see how he can has a way of kind of getting information
it's
out of you.
Very smooth.
But he's the same. He's not any
different. I was listening
now.
Going, who's the host here?
Yeah, he was working you.
He was trying to
figure out what was going on there.
Yeah, I was like,
You were the guest on your own show.
Yeah, I was like, I hate that. Well, he did the same thing Larry King did.
Yep.
So tell me about this, Habib. Who is this? Imus would do the same thing. Don Imus would do the exact same thing. He would always say, who is this? Because Lee would come with me to Imus's show. That's how I started in radio. He had me on in 1996. The first time I was ever on a show during the Republican convention in San Diego, when it was Bob Dole, of course. Obviously Bob Dole was the nominee, and everyone knew Bob Dole was going to lose to Clinton. But I was on MSNBC. I'd just been hired by MSNBC, and he saw me doing these debates, these little interstitial debates on MSNBC. So his guys called me, and I said, I've heard of this Imus thing, but I've never really listened to the show. So then I started going on the show, and it was a scream. It was so much fun. And then we ended up, remember, Lee, becoming friends with Bernie McGurk and Chuck McCord. And I was like, well, I want to do this. I want to do the same thing because it was basically just like growing up.
Remember
insulting
you did the
people.
Lilla, you did the Lilla Festival thing where you went undercover?
Explain that to people, please.
Yeah, the Lilla Festival was like this. It was all these women, and it was women power, and they were at Jones Beach doing a big show. So my sister, who's a rock and roll musician, dressed up Laura like a flower child. And she had on the bell bottoms and the jewelry, and she was walking up to all these booths interviewing all these girls. And then she came on the air dressed in character and reported from the Lilith Festival what she learned. And the best one was there was a self-defense area for women and women empowerment.
Like women's empowerment booth.
And so Laura's like, what's this all about? And we were recording it. And it's like, oh, you know, it's about women empowerment. You say,
and
well,
I was twisting my hair. I'm like, awesome. Like, cool. I like love this. That was the first Lilith I've been to. Cool. And I love the Indigo Girls. The Indigo Girls speak to me. Yeah. And I'm just so happy to be here. And I was rambling like any random feminist ramble.
And then you stop and you said, where's your position on guns?
Yeah, so because like I want to equalize like level the playing field because there's so many misogynists out there. So I was wondering if like you have any like gun buying tips or like and stuff I couldn't do now because I'd be recognized. So yep. I can't. But you could back then I could kind of hide and do little. Yep.
15 fun. Years before the Me Too movement. You were just
15 years
it.
Between Me Too. Yep. Before Me Too. And those, I think what happens in sort of regular media, beyond radio, and this is why radio is such an important, it remains so important to the country, is that it's freer. Like Lee was at Fox, and AJ's been at Fox with me, and I love my Fox show and my Fox team. But it's different. Because it's television, you need visual elements, so you do have to plan things out. And in radio, and what you're doing in radio, it's a lot more organic. If things happen, you don't know where things are going to go, and that's the beauty of radio.
Yep.
You don't.
And we've never planned our best moments. They just happen.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it was like a three-act play every day, and it was a different one every day.
Yep.
Theater of the mind every day.
AJ, we have to – I just got invited to lunch with Maggie Thatcher, and I was in like – workout clothes because I always like to do something like workout before the show. So I don't get to do it every day, but a lot of days I would.
Hair's wet
coming in, same thing. And I said, AJ, I need clothes. Can you come with me? So AJ's like sliding shoe boxes underneath the dressing room at
Fashion
Ann
Police.
Taylor.
Fashion police.
I was like, oh, I
Union
gotta get
Station.
A really, I need like a blazer because it has to be something kind of formal. He's like sliding things, getting the salesperson. Can you throw? I need a
That's
size
not
seven
her
and
size.
A half.
That's not her
what
size.
What does she look
Move
like?
It.
An elephant? She's a size four. And AJ's screaming at the person like, who is? Who are these people? I don't even know what's going
She's
on.
She's gonna meet the Iron Lady.
Oh, and they're like, well,
hurry up!
She's working in the ironworks. What is?
Sounds like one of those '80s movies where they're changing all the outfits on. You have the '80s music playing in the background.
Yeah.
He's sitting there shaking his head like no, that doesn't work.
Yeah, minus the
John
shoulder
Hughes
pads.
Movie.
Yeah, exactly. Minus the shoulder pads. Well, I did have some moments where I was confused about sports figures and pronunciation.
Oh, this is interesting from the Reliable Sources column in the Washington Post. Well, they have a list of the 20 toughest guys in the United States. Number one, Brett Favre. Is that how you say it? I don't know football. Favre?
Favre. Favre.
Favre, you say?
No, I'm saying, you're saying it just like Ben Stiller said in Something About Mary.
Brett, how do you say it then? Sophocles.
Favre. Sophocles.
Mike, how do you say Brett Favre's name?
Favre.
How do you spell it?
Favre.
You spell it Favre, but you say it Favre.
Wait a second. We're listening to Lee like he's some authority on the English language.
It's how you say the name. You're saying it how Ben Stiller said it in Something About Mary.
Well, I don't like football.
That's why you didn't think that scene was funny.
So you guys think it's Lee is right on this occasion?
I am right.
It's Favre.
Thank you. Favre.
Oh, my God. I still wonder if you're right about that. I still don't.
Yeah, phonetically, it's all over the place. But I think Habib was right that one time.
Well, there are moments where you're absolutely 100% sure, and you take it just a little bit too far. All right, so we're going to take a break. We have Newt Gingrich. He's going to be joining us. Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State. Huge news today on, again, the issue we started with. And AJ's going to tell the story coming up on the 2006 amnesty fight and why we, you know, this show really led the fight against this wide scale amnesty that was being pushed by then John McCain. and Ted Kennedy and others. And so we're going to talk about that and a lot more and share some of our favorite recollections and yours. This is our last conversation of this type together. And I want you to call in. You guys got me through a lot of great times and a lot of really tough times. And I think maybe on occasion I helped you as well. So 855-40-LAURA, the last show.
The Laura Ingram Show.
We give you Larry King's questions. You guess the guest.
Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's our guest.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Tommy Lee.
Michael Isikoff.
Jerry Lewis.
Aaron Brown.
Clay Aiken.
Senator McCain.
The Motley Crue.
Laura Ingram, an old friend.
Callers are prohibited from having watched Larry King live in the last 30 days.
All right. Question number one to Newt Gingrich for Guess the Guest.
Do you like comedy better than drama?
Anything yet, Newt? Do you like comedy better than drama?
I'm going to guess Ellen DeGeneres.
Question number two.
You didn't mind that at the beginning people were taking you on the way you look.
That was question number two, taking you on the way you look.
I don't have a clue.
Well, he hasn't watched Larry King in the last 30 days.
I haven't watched Larry King in a long time.
Question number three.
Tell me about Cary Grant and your friendship.
Elizabeth Taylor.
Oh, well, that you were very quick to answer, Elizabeth Taylor. This is very interesting. What will the professor know and what won't he know on the culture? Question number four.
Does it seem like 42 years since you won that Academy Award?
Come on, Newt. That was question number four.
That would have been Elizabeth Taylor.
Okay, still going back to the answers that are wrong. Question number five.
You also got the honorary Oscar in 1991 just for your career.
That's a Lifetime Achievement Award given by the Academy Award.
I know. Catherine Hepburn.
Question.
Damn, failing. I feel like I'm losing on Larry King.
Question number six.
We have not talked to you since the passing of both Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. And you did, of course, those wonderful grumpy old men. What are your memories first of Matthau?
Sophia Loren.
Yay!
No. She's an icon who doesn't do interviews, but she's talking to us. The one, the only Sophia Loren on Larry King Live.
Newt, thank you for coming into the
studio.
And
you're sorry that I don't watch Larry more often.
No.
Hey.
The Laura Ingram Show.
All right, just a little moment from 2004 with Newt Gingrich. We had to really look for that one. Newt Gingrich is with us now in our last terrestrial radio show before we go into the podcast in January with Podcast One. And I thought it was fitting to bring our favorites back for this last show after 17 and a half years, four presidential elections, three adoptions, lots of political ups and downs and cultural changes in the United States. Newt Gingrich is with us now. Hey, Newt, how are you? I got Habib. I got Lee Habib in the studio.
Oh, that's great. Hey, Lee, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Speaker?
Hey, Newt. Newt, what do you think about that? You're a little shaky on the cultural questions there.
Well, I doubt if I do any better today. But it was a lot of fun. I did learn. And I actually substituted for him several times.
Did you? I didn't even know that.
It was quite a trip. I mean, he of course was a very different kind of guy and did a very different show.
Well,
but it was fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Are you in Rome? Is a terrible connection, which is just fitting for my last show. Are you in Rome? Where are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm in Rome. I'll try to see if I can get to a slightly better place. But
are you in the bathroom? Where are you, Newt?
No, it's the Italian telephone system.
Oh, it's the Italian telephone system. What are we going back to the ancient Rome here, the aqueducts.
Yes.
All right, Newt, let's talk really briefly about politics. The wall doesn't look like it's going to get built, at least the way we thought it was going to get built. And now, did we just hear a flush? I swear we heard a flush in the background. Or is that I'm joking. Newt, we're in our cups already early in the morning. But this wall might not get built in the way we thought it was going to get built. How much of a problem is this going to be for the president going forward, or will there be some creative solution here?
Yeah, I think it's a big problem for the president. because I think his base believes in him. They believe that that's what he's committed to. And I think that from that standpoint, he's got to find some way to keep working this problem until he solves it. But it was sort of the signature issue that helped make him president. And I think, you know, I don't think he can back off, even though he didn't force a shutdown this week. I think he's going to come back and keep fighting.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of my listeners, a lot of the viewers on Fox wanted him to take this to the mat. And it, every time things get kicked off until the lame duck, every time it's the same thing. It's a continuing resolution. Everyone wants to go home for Christmas. And meanwhile, you have a few members of this Freedom Caucus up there saying, what are we doing? What the heck are we doing? It's like Jim Jordan and Louie Gohmert and a few others who seem to be closest to Trump and the way they think about these issues. And yet the party still hasn't gotten the memo. And Paul Ryan is basically already back in Janesville up in that duck blind. So, you know, he's making tributes to himself, a 6-part video tribute on his website, which we was fascinating, but it's not exactly why we wanted the Republicans to have the majority. I mean, and as a former speaker, your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm back. Look, I think the whole party has a problem because on some of the signal issues, they're not delivering and they can't explain it. And it's exactly what ultimately led the Tea Party movement to rebel in 2010. And I think the president's going to have to figure out a new and more effective strategy. Part of it, frankly, is to just drive home every single day, every time anyone in America is hurt or killed by somebody who's here illegally, the president has to make it the Democratic Party's responsibility. And he's got to keep driving that until the distinction is so powerful that Democrats, a substantial number of them, start to say, you know, we've got to do something for the border.
Well, their new line is, well, building a 30-foot concrete structure. They keep using the word concrete to evoke like Nazi Germany or the Berlin Wall. So they keep saying concrete. Well, there's always the emotional messaging devoid of any substantive meaning. But it's the top line on everybody's social media.
That is the nature of the world we currently live in. And the president at times is as good as they are at doing it.
Yep.
And he is going to have to focus on driving it home. And he nibbles towards it occasionally, but he doesn't consistently stay on it. And he ought to come back again and again and again. The Democrats don't want to defend America overseas. They don't want to defend America in America. They're not prepared to pay for, you know, the kind of defense we need. And the result is going to be people are, in fact, with MS-13 and with other problems, this stuff is all dangerous. Yeah. And I think he's got to continue to drive that.
$750 billion military budget, but we can't find $5 billion to get a really meaningful wall. I mean, think about that. Syria's border, Iraq's border, Afghanistan's border, and our border, no. We can't do it. Newt Gingrich, thank you so much for joining us wherever you were. I heard a flush. I'm telling you. I heard something in the background. It happens. It's life. It's radio. It's the last show. Not a moment too soon. Pompeo next.
We've been fighting for a long time in Syria. I've been president for almost 2 years, and we've really stepped it up. And we have won against ISIS. We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home.
Honestly, this makes what Obama did in Iraq. It's replicating that, but in many ways, it's even worse. It's hard to imagine that any president would wake up and make this kind of decision with this little communication, with this little preparation.
Give me a break.
Well, what I don't understand about Bob Corker is that was he not aware of what the president has been saying since 2015, including as recently as in April when he said, we need to move troops home. We've won where we wanted to win against ISIS. Joining us now, just a moment, we'll be back with him. Mike Pompeo, he was just there and now he's gone. What happened, kiddos? This happens. I hope it wasn't because I played that soundbite. Suddenly he's gone. I mean, it's just, I'm sure Mike Pompeo can deal with it. So we'll get into that in just a moment. A big press conference underway. We'll take it for a second. Let's go to CNN. Rod Rosenstein's talking about what the Chinese government has been doing to try to break into our government systems. Let's listen.
Consulting, healthcare, biotechnology, automotive.
We will continue to monitor this. You heard the deputy attorney.
Okay, well, two hackers working for the Chinese government. Hackers from China stole 50 million personnel files from the Office of Personnel Management during the Obama years. I'm not blaming Obama, but this is just, this happens. This is brutal, including my personnel file, which, you know, it was my file, I guess, when I was clerking at the Supreme Court, your background check. So they know your family, where you lived, you know, where you always lived for the, you know, 20 years preceding, and all your personal information. So it's disturbing. And big announcement coming from DHS about what we're going to be doing with Mexico on the immigration issue. Joining us now, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who has become a friend and has done a phenomenal job for this administration and the cabinet. You know, the critics are going to hate. They're going to hate. This is what they do. On the Syria question, all this other stuff. We've had huge foreign policy successes. The president gets no credit for any of them. And it's preposterous. Secretary Pompeo, Merry Christmas. Good to talk to you on our last show, my friend. Really? Seriously? Is he there? Where was it? It says he's there, James. This is fun. Is this part? You're hearing a strange tone. Let's make sure we get Pompeo back on the line. I don't know what's going on here. Well, what can you do, Lee? Remember these days?
The Chinese.
Yeah, it's the Chinese. Well, he can start talking. If the secretary can hear me, he can just chime in, or you can reconnect. But the one thing that's frustrating for a radio host is that you can't control the technology. That's the one thing that I can't be in control of. Oh yeah, we had moments, Lee, where we not only knocked myself off the air once in my first show, the first ever radio show, I knocked myself off the air, and Christopher Hitchens was left going, "Hello, hello,
hello,
hello, hello,"
and I was just sitting there like I'd never spoken a word before.
Lee, it's like,
hello.
And in New York, Page Six is reporting. Lee starts picking up a newspaper and reading. It's so embarrassing. But look, the question in this century remaining will be, are we going to be, I mean, is this going to be the American century or the Chinese century? That's it. That, I mean, we can talk about Mueller and Rosenstein and whether Sessions should, all that stuff. Long after that's all gone, the question will linger. Is it our century or is it the century of the other $12 trillion economy that has a larger standing army than ours? And that, you know, has a Marxist-Leninist ideology, which was just reconfirmed 3 days ago by President Xi. All right, Mike Pompeo is with us now. I don't know what's been happening, Mr. Secretary, but oh my gosh, we tried to get you on, couldn't hear you. We're doing shadow puppets over here. Hey, Mr. Secretary, how are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you. How are you today?
Good. It's our last show, so I wanted to bring on my faves, and you made the list. Isn't that amazing?
Congratulations on 17-plus years of excellence.
Oh, thank you very much. The soundbite we played for you when we were coming in was a series of comments made by Republicans criticizing the president's decision to pull troops out of Syria. Number one, did you get a heads up on this decision? And number two, why is this the right decision now?
Oh, Laura, this was a decision that was made with lots of consultation between all the senior level officials, including myself, with the president. So, yes, I had more than a heads up. Second, remember the mission statement there. The primary reason the president's talked about this was to take down the caliphate. We remember folks in cages being lit on fire. The primary mission was to go take down the ISIS caliphate. That is at the very tail end of completion. And we have ISIS remnants in lots of pockets around the world. Your listeners should be assured that the United States of America intends to continue that counterterrorism campaign, continue the fight against ISIS, whether it stems from Syria or other places. The decision to remove those folks from Syria does not diminish the enormous success this administration has had in the Middle East fighting terrorism.
I know there's a big announcement today about what we're going to be doing with Mexico and perhaps Central America vis-a-vis our border and other efforts to, you know, keep people in their homelands where they're going to be working and be able to raise their children there and hold on to their own culture and so forth. What can you tell us?
So we're announcing today what I think is a truly groundbreaking plan to keep illegal aliens out of the United States. It is a very significant border security development. It will no longer be the case that aliens who come here remain inside the United States during the pendency of their asylum claim. So the idea of catch and release will be replaced with catch and return. We expect this will result in a truly historic drop in illegal immigration because the incentive to come here, file an asylum claim, and remain in the United States during the pendency of that claim will no longer exist.
And is this in consultation with other countries' presidents and leadership, so they are on board with the receiving of migrants back to their home countries?
So we will be returning the detainees to Mexico, or excuse me, the illegal aliens to Mexico. We've made clear to the Mexican government our intent to do this, and they have made an announcement, or shortly will make an announcement, about how they're going to deal with those returned migrants. They're going to offer them opportunities inside of their country to protect the rights of those migrants, but they will not be inside the United States during the time that their asylum claim is being processed.
Oh, this is a groundbreaking move. And I know you've been working on, I follow your travel schedule from afar, and I kind of see where, thinking, Pompeo, Nielsen, they're up to something. And I was hoping there was something good, but you always have to deal with the lawsuits. You've had ACLU and various migrant groups and NGOs getting together, pulling money, pulling resources, and you have these nationwide permanent and temporary injunctions that continue to thwart the president's his Article 3 authority to Article 1 authority, excuse me, to protect our country. And what are you going to do about that? Because you know the moment this is announced, they're going to take you to court.
So we hope that's not the case, but we expect that you're right about that. This is pretty clear. The Immigration and Naturalization Act, Section 235, makes clear that the president has the authority to do this. It's under existing law, and we remain convinced that this is a power that the president was granted by Congress to execute exactly the way we have. We've had lots of thought and legal review of this. We are confident that we are on firm ground, and we know that the fact that these folks will be taken care of, they'll get more help in Mexico, will solve the problem we've had of folks coming into the United States, claiming asylum, and then disappearing into our country during the pendency of their claim.
Okay, so when someone comes here, let's say they walk across the border, they claim asylum and cite, they make the credible fear threshold, persecution and homeland, which is, again, we got a judge yesterday, Emmett Sullivan, who has basically said you gang violence and domestic abuse both count now as asylum categories. So at that point, when they claim asylum, their case would be pending. Would they have to then go back home if they make that threshold claim of credible fear?
So there will obviously be a detailed process for the claims that these folks will be making. I'll leave to DHS to talk about the details of how that will be processed. But this is a fundamental shift in how the United States is going to handle the disposition of these illegal aliens during the time that their claim is being processed. We're confident we're on firm legal ground, and we think this is, frankly, in the best interest of these migrants as well. We think that they will now see that they can't disappear inside the United States, and so they will remain in their home countries. a place that doesn't present all the risks that we have seen to these migrants, these illegal aliens entering the United States that comes from making the transit through Mexico into our country.
Mr. Secretary, I know you have to hop in a second, but this survey that came out a few days ago that was parroted and trumpeted all over certain cable stations, cable outlets, CEOs say that they often have to apologize to their business partners abroad for Trump's diplomacy. Three-quarters of CEOs say they've apologized for the president. Your reaction to those CEOs?
I didn't see that survey. That's ridiculous. America remains a global leader on every front. President Trump has exerted American influence in a way that protects America, that understands that American sovereignty matters and that other nations' sovereignty matters too. We and every American citizen should be rightfully proud of American diplomacy in the Trump administration.
And will there be any news or announcements on China before the end of the year?
Stand by.
Okay, Mr. Secretary.
I know it's your last show, but nothing to add.
Oh, darn. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for joining us. Have a Merry Christmas to you and your family. And we just appreciate you so much. And you've done such a great job, both at the CIA and at State, and a great team there as well. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Laura. Merry Christmas to you.
All right, we'll take a break. Don't go away.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Fires lighted, kids excited.
While we waited through the night for the election results to roll in, one news anchor managed to ease our nerves with his commentary. Dan,
if a frog had side pockets, he'd carry a handgun.
Rather was at his best Tuesday night.
This presidential race is hotter than the devil's anvil. We're on these returns like white on rice. George Bush is sweeping through the South like a big wheel through a Delta cotton field. In Missouri, the show-me state, show-me insufficient data. No question now that Kerry's rapidly reaching the point where he's got it back to the wall, his short tail's on fire, and the bill collector's at the door. They beat him like a rented mule. Try to read the tea leaves before the cup is done, you can get yourself burned.
Ingraham Show.
Take her easy there, Pilgrim.
That was in 2004 when it looked like Kerry in the early part of the evening was going to beat Bush. And old Dan Rather was very, very excited. That was before the big dust up about his. What was his controversy? I don't even remember now.
Oh, it was the document, the falsification of the document.
Oh, that's just that. Story, yeah.
No, just that. All the giants.
A typo. It was a typographical.
All the giants.
Yep.
We got Rose gone. We got Dan Rather gone. Brian Williams is at 11 o'clock. Matt Lauer is gone. Who else? There's a lot of others. Les Moonves is gone at CBS. I mean, line two, MR. MR. Who the hell is MR? MR. This is our last show, last radio show, so enjoy it. And remember, podcast one in January. MR, go ahead. Hello. MR, are you there? What is going on with our lines, James? Okay, well, MR will have to call back. I don't understand why. This is like a Curb Your Enthusiasm. The last show with technical problems. You can't. So, AJ, let's take us back to 2006 and a particular legislative fight involving George W. Bush, John McCain, and others on Capitol Hill.
So that what was known as the McCain-Kennedy bill was actually called technically the Secure America and Orderly Immigration Act. Okay? There was an 06 version and an 07 version. And it was the McCain-Kennedy amnesty bill. And they were all over you. They wanted to try to convince you to support this thing, getting private phone calls, getting knocks at the front door, trying to get us to, you know, John Kyle even tried to convince you that it was wonderful. And we totally stopped it. So it was family values don't stop at the Rio Grande.
Oh, no, that all the Bush trope. That didn't work. We shut that down. We would have had another 10 million illegal immigrants in the country if we had signed. MR. OK, MR is on the line now. Line two. MR.
Hello, Ingraham. Hello.
Hello.
don't know what the problem is here. Your phone system is as bad as this show, honey. It's terrible today.
Oh, hello? Thanks. Thank you. Okay, I hear you.
Oh, well, you said a moment ago, Ingraham, that all the giants are leaving us. Well, I had to say goodbye to another giant as you leave the radio airwaves. And I'll be glad to go back to my blues station and not have to hear your voice anymore.
Okay. Well, first of all, this is not exactly...
Hello? We love you,
it's
too.
Not exactly the nicest send-off.
Well, look, we have been, I would say, frenemies for a while now since you took the Obamas on. You went after them in a cruel way, Laura Ingraham. You had to attack their garden. You had to attack Misha's beautiful dresses. But you did withhold your scorn for that wonderful example of a elder stage lady. And that would be who? Go ahead.
Marian.
You can reveal it now,
Marian,
Laura Ingraham.
Marian Robinson, Michelle's mother, is a longtime listener of the Laura Ingraham Show.
Wow.
Well, I am. And you talk shit in the family, but you left me alone. And you're good in my book, girl. So I'll be watching your Fox show and whatever that pod thing you're doing. And we'll see you down the road.
All right, Granny. You have a Merry Christmas and give Mish my best on that never-ending book tour.
Healthy radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
I hear voices like...
Dueling Matthews on the Laura Ingraham Show.
Is it Chris? Or Saturday Night Live's Daryl Hammond.
Loving on the loss of a Germano commoner of the systematic slaughter of innocent men, women, and children pleads innocent to the charge of crimes against humanity.
Wait, who is this?
This morning it's Chris Matthews. I'm on Hardball.
I'm Chris
Matthews. Wait.
I'm Chris Matthews. You know me very well. You know it's...
Wait a second. Who am I talking to? I'm supposed to be interviewing Chris Matthews.
He's an imposter. He's a rogue and peasant slave from the island of Manhattan where people use the F word as a comma. Stop the warm-up, the softball talk.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
I ran into Chris Matthews going into Fox last night. Oh my gosh. And nothing's changed. I have wet hair. And it was maybe two nights ago. Was it last night? No, it was Lee. Were you? No, it was the night before. And wet hair. And he's like, oh! I mean, he's still the same. Still shouting at you. Still a number. You're still 10 out of 10.
Blondie!
Blondie! 10 out of 10. Like, oh my God. Imagine an amorous moment with Chris Matthews.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I'd rather not.
One gear.
We had a short-lived segment called Mystery Guest, where you came in one day.
Uh-huh.
And he was sitting in your seat.
Oh, remember? He was already there.
He was already there. We only did this twice, because you're like, oh, I don't know who it's going to be. But there was two mystery guests. Chris Matthews was the second one. Do you remember who the first one was? He was on the phone. A little pop quiz here.
I don't.
Famous comedian, was a huge fan of yours.
Gosh, do you remember who it was?
Jackie
Mason.
Oh, that's right.
They were our two mystery guests.
Oh, Jackie Mason.
They
he was
two.
So great. Our last show here on the Laura Ingraham Show, and it's wild. We're talking to a lot of our best, favorite, most funny, hilarious guests. I don't know what that is, but we have sound coming across our transom. As usual, we have technical problems. Phones are not turned off. And I was late. Mike Neiman was our board op producer, sound producer for, gosh, Mike, what? Tell me the years you were there. It seemed like it was yesterday, but you've been gone for a while.
2012 or 13, I think, to 16.
Okay. How you doing, Mikey?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, it's so good to hear your voice, man. You're out in Cali, right? You're in California?
I am. I'm out in Los Angeles right now where it's a balmy 79 degrees.
All right, Mike, here's this question. What did you learn from working for me? What did you learn?
How to toughen my skin up.
Mike, where's the sound file? That's edited wrong. Laura. Laura. Mike, you have to edit the... You can't edit the sound bite. The intonation can't go up at the end. Laura, it's the way it was cut. You can fix it. Can you bring the volume down? Isn't there a way to meld the volume down? I'll do my best. But Mike, at the end,
it's
you know,
like it was yesterday.
Yeah, but Mike, at the end, you had more tattoos, right? You still had the same hoodie that you wore the first day you came into the studio, and we're good to go.
I was going to send it to you. I was going to send it to you for Christmas.
Oh, really? You should. I said to Mike, but first of all, no. When you interviewed with me, Mike Neiman interviewed with me. He had long sleeves. Long sleeves, and I had kind of an unspoken rule: no tattoos, no weird piercing. I mean, it's just not my thing. And again, times have changed, and everybody has tattoos and piercings. I'm like, if you don't have a tattoo piercing, you can't work on the show. But back then, it was so. Mike had the long sleeves, and Mike, I remember the first time you pushed up those sleeves, my jaw hit the. Oh no! It was. And Mike always comes in. And Mike feels the need to document everything that happens in his life with ink on his skin. I'm like, do you ever think of a pad and paper? How about a little tape recorder you can take with you, a little self-dictation? But Mike feels the need. If it's not on his skin, he either can't remember it or he didn't live it. So that's see, Mike, nothing's
exactly.
changed.
Exactly. And I still vow you're going to get one day.
Oh, yeah, well, maybe. Maybe that I'm going to have some free time in the morning, Mike. Right. I'm going to go get a tattoo.
Exactly.
Hey, but Mike, you are we love you. We miss you. You were such an incredibly important part of the show. We left Talk Radio Network, which is a outfit I was with for 9 years, and we started, and it was like a series of difficult transitional moments. And you were just fantastic. And you worked with James Coluccio, who was working and doing stuff with the Caps, the Capitals, and he stepped in to help. And now James is our board ops, done a great job for us. But you were really integral for those very difficult years. I know it wasn't always easy, and sorry if I wasn't always nice to you. But, you know, not really. I'm not sorry. You deserve it. You deserve it.
I'm sure AJ and I'll know exactly what it was. I love you to death.
Oh my!
I love you to death. And it was a great time on the radio show. And when you come out to Cali to do a taping, you better let me know so we can go out to lunch.
Oh, no. Mike and I, lunch. It's called tequila shots, my friend. We're not doing lunch. We don't do lunch. I was like, you have lunch? I don't have lunch. Okay? Yeah. We're going out.
We have to ease into those.
No. We're going out. But Neiman came in. Mike, you knew nothing about politics. Is that pretty fair description? You knew very little about politics when you started.
I knew that Obama was the president.
By the end, Mike was, well, what do you think McConnell's going to do? Like, by the end, Mike had all the lingo, the names, the committees. Like, you knew a lot.
I did.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I did.
That's not bad.
But
Mike,
you know, the best part of being out here, Laura, is I can watch your show at 7 o'clock, not
10
o'clock.
Yeah, 10 o'clock is...
My old age is catching up to me.
Yeah, well, all those tattoos, that ink goes right to your hippocampus. hey, Nemo, you have a great Christmas, okay? And stay safe out there. Thanks for all the great work you did on the show.
Laura, I love you. Have a very, very unpolitically correct Merry Christmas, and send my love to Maria, Dimitri, and Bam Bam.
Oh, I will. They all miss you. And finish up that montage of sound bites you never did in 2013, okay? Get it done. No, we appreciate it. All right, 855-40-LAURA. In a few moments, we're going to be talking to Craig Shirley. He's going to join us. Kellyanne Conway is going to stop by. And there was a moment, it seems like it was yesterday, where we came up, well, there are certain topics that we felt the need to tackle on this show and expand your horizon, your thinking, and your understanding of, well, what's possible between the sexes. So the Discovery Channel puts on a lot of programming that is compelling. But this was kind of double the fun, double the interest. It turns out that men sometimes do have breasts, and the Discovery Channel was right on it.
John doesn't just accept his breasts, he celebrates them by wearing bras.
Right now, From the last time that I was measured, which was about 6 months ago, I am a 50 double D.
What?
Which makes me larger than almost most women.
The country. Larger than almost ever. I mean, is Anna Nicole Smith in? No, she's nowhere near that. She's lost all that weight. Oh, my. What? First of all, what was this show before we play anymore? I'm worried about playing anything else.
It was called Men with Breasts.
But
it was
on the whole
Discovery Channel.
John and his wife, it turns out, decided that the option of reduction wasn't for them. Turns out she's a breast woman.
By the time I married my wife, I was fairly confident about my breasts. We have talked about here and there about what would happen if I decided to have surgery, and she says that she'd prefer not to. It's something that's become a part of our lives. It's a part of our relationship. And if it's something that works and that's part of the relationship, then, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Lee just somehow gravitated toward this show over the weekend.
Men developing breasts isn't unusual, but much rarer is the phenomenon of male lactation, when men actually produce milk.
What? First of all, you're all both sick, okay? Both of you need help.
David and Laura Shanley from Boulder, Colorado, claim that David began to produce milk when their first child was born.
David decided he wanted to try to lactate just to see if he could do it.
I was intrigued by this woman. She was a medical doctor, and she had done this research and said that this was possible. So I was kind of just intrigued. Could this be real?
Sometimes science goes too far.
Probably about 2 weeks it took. One day I was reading, I just looked down and I was all wet here. And milk was flowing out. Milk was flowing out.
This is when I can't work with two male producers. How does the Discovery Channel find these people?
I've put the lactating man in touch with Larry King's people, because I can't wait to hear that intro.
No. Stand up, turn around.
He's hot.
I guess those don't grow, though, do they? It would be one of these.
Do you enjoy being hated?
I mean, but this... David is lactating just because he can.
Milk was flowing out.
The Laura Ingram Show.
Joining us now, and it's been way too long, Donald Trump.
It has been too long. There's no question about it.
So we turned on television today, and I saw you doing a Verizon Wireless commercial. What's going on with that?
Well, that was sort of something that they came. It is a good company, and it's a wonderful group, and they paid a lot of money for a little work, and I figured I have to do
it. Yes, capitalist. This is why we love him. He's a capitalist.
It was a lot of money.
Oh, my gosh. I had forgotten all the interviews we did with Donald Trump over the years.
The Apprentice, baby. The Apprentice.
Yeah,
we
talked to him all the time when he was just like a business guy. Like once every, really, 3 or 4 weeks.
Every Monday, we wanted the inside scoop on who we fired and why.
Yeah, and The Apprentice. So he did the Monday recap for us. But going all the way back to 2002... and we played that for you earlier. And we have a lot of friends calling in. Just a moment, another special guest. But first, Kellyanne Conway from the White House. Kellyanne, I've known for, oh my gosh. Kellyanne, I've known you for probably 20
years.
Decades, yes. We won't say it, but decades. I've known you for decades. How you doing, girl?
Laura, I just want to start out telling you, congratulations. We're all so proud of you and the voice and the reason that you brought to conversation and debate for nearly 18 years now. I just want to tell everybody something you may have forgotten, which is you were at my wedding on April 28th, 2001. It was a Saturday. You came all the way to Philadelphia to the wedding, and you announced that starting that Monday, you were going to delve into radio in a big way. And we're just so proud of you. You've survived three presidents. This is the third president. And presidents, I guess, Obama and Bush were term limited, but you have not been. And we know you're self-term limiting because you've got so much else going on, a very successful, wildly successful television program, and those three beautiful children. And I appreciate firsthand the choices that we all make. And I think, look, long before people were obsessed with Twitter and TV, radio, radio has been and remains a central medium through
it
which
does.
People can have a conversation without the distraction of the tweets and and the likes and the this and the distraction of the visual image on TV. So
I agree. I mean,
congratulations.
You're so nice. And I forgot. See, people are reminding me stuff that I forgot. You and George got married, and I was rushing. And we went up to for the wedding. It was so much fun. And then Lee and I were starting the show Monday. Yes. Oh, my gosh. That is unbelievable. Before 9/11, the world was a different place.
I said for better or for worse on the altar in front of five priests.
That's right.
We find out what that means every day. Breaking news.
Breaking news in the Laura Ingraham Show. The president is funny, though. But I've got to say, we're doing almost no politics today. We had Pompeo on earlier. He had some great new information on what's going on with the asylum and the immigration and repatriating people back during the pendency of their hearings, which is awesome news, by the way. But we're basically doing personal stuff on these last three hours before we do the podcast. And Kellyanne, you spend time with the president almost every day. And I think what people don't realize is he's so he's funny, number one. Number two, he's extremely charming and gracious. And I always tell him, we need to see more charm. Where's the charm? Give me the charm.
I agree completely. And there are he'll invite different media outlets into the Oval to interview him on the record, and you've seen the fruits of that recently. And almost to a person, I'm not in most of those because I try not to be, but almost to a person, they'll say afterwards, he's so charming. He's just so great in person. He should show more of that. Well, he shows it all the time,
all
but
right.
They choose, I think I call it, social media muscle and cable news cojones. I think they hide behind their predisposed opinion and maybe what some of their viewers and followers want to hear. But there's no question he's funny. He's engaging. He's a great storyteller. He rarely, I just know him to forget nothing and no one. And so it allows him to knit together these different people, places, and things and experiences and outtakes from his life as a successful businessman, what you were just talking about, his success on television, and obviously his success in politics, which first he was sort of one and done, meaning the first time he ran for anything, he succeeded. It happened to be the highest office in the land. I still think it's a difficult adjustment for the Beltway. There's no question, difficult. But as you know, from your viewers, from your listeners here, even from a cultural perspective, let alone a political one, they appreciate that he's trying to keep his promises. They appreciate that he's up against mountains of opposition and resistance, sometimes for absolutely no reason, sometimes because people truly believe in a different philosophy. But he just carries on. He really is a couple of the dumbest things I ever see written about him or said about him, and the people couldn't possibly know because they have no access to him or the White House, pretty much. But the one is, he's fuming, he's isolated, he's angry, he's rarely by himself, by the way, and he's always working the phones, he's always having meetings. We walk in and out of the Oval, he has many policy briefings and daily intelligence briefings, but beyond that, he's somebody who likes the company of others.
He generally
is interested in different people's points of views, what points of view. And also this nonsense that he has no one around him who will give different advice. He actually surrounded himself from day one with people who have differing opinions on fundamental issues. Those of us who are on the campaign know how he won. He connected directly with people, but he ran on a certain set of issues and certain promises that they expect him to keep.
Yep.
And there's no question about that. But also he's also somebody who he's not afraid to listen to somebody's dissenting opinion and a difference of backgrounds. And I appreciate that. That's the mark of a real leader, somebody who takes into account different opinions, opposition, and then weighs the consequences and the input and makes a decision because, after all, he was elected and we were.
All right. Kellyanne Conway, thank you so much for calling
in. God bless you, Laura.
Merry Christmas to you and George and the kids, and I hope I see you really soon in the new year. If not sooner. Kellyanne Conway coming up. Other special guest Craig Shirley and some voices from the past that you may just remember.
Jack Nicholson. Interesting stuff from Nicholson. He says, I love discourse. I'm dying to have my mind changed. If I were an Arab American, I would insist on being profiled. This is not the time for civil rights. There are larger issues for Americans. Hello! He's smarter than most of the political pundits out there. I'm a pretty liberal Democrat, he goes on to say, but I'm not after Bush the way all the rest of them are. Isn't that a slap to Sheen and Penn and Streisand and that whole crowd? I don't know what else Bush can do. We just have to see how it goes. Good for you, Jack. Hell, a Hollywood. Making some sense.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Lee Habib and AJ Rice and I are listening to this, and we're completely forgetting that this even happened on the show. Like, you're listening to things going, I don't even remember that. That's scary. That's scary. AJ, what were you saying during the break that you remember some weird thing?
Well, Katie Couric had left the Today Show, and Meredith Vieira was
taking over.
You had predicted that Katie Couric would be back in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So you were a little bit late to the show. You come running in, and we're ready to go. We said, Katie Couric has returned. You sit down, you put the headphones on, and Matt Lauer was talking to America's favorite female Muppet. Instead, you didn't know who it was. We told you it was Katie Couric, but it was technically and really Miss Piggy.
Oh, no. It was, oh, that's...
filled it, and you yelled at us.
Oh, my gosh. Well, what can I, what can I do? Lee, do you remember when we did the dating segment when you tried to fix me up with people? Do you remember? Various people. It was the People Magazine's 10 most eligible bachelors, and you actually got a number of them.
Sure did.
To come in, and I think I went on a date with at least a few of them. Yep. One was the cake maker in D.C.
That's right.
Cake Love, that just went out of business a couple of years ago. He's a nice guy. And then there was another one who I think ended up in some legal trouble. I can't remember. But do you remember
well,
that?
Well, I had told you the story about how I had auditioned for Studs and made it all the way to the final and going on TV.
Oh, that show Studs.
The show Studs.
Even tried to get on.
Yeah, I did. Hey, look.
How did
I
that
was,
happen?
Hey, look.
Made it all the way to the final.
You do what you got to do. One of my proudest achievements, by the way. It's a sad life, isn't it? But so we just said, you know what? Laura's single. What the hell? Let's use the show in every way we can to improve her life. And that was it. And then we also put her on Match.com.
Oh, I did. And by the way,
because I got married from Match.com.
He got married. I went on Match.com. This is people are listening to this. And this, you know, it just started or whatever. I met some great people on Match.com.
Yep.
Lee, however, then said, and they end up being my friends to this day. Okay, to this day. Lee says, well, what do you do if you know, you get to the place where you're supposed to meet the person and the picture looks nothing like the picture online? And Lee says, well, it's. Tell you what happened. Lee might not remember this. Lee was supposed to meet someone at a bar not too far, and Lee doesn't even drink, but at a bar not too far from the studio. And her photo, she's a really pretty young woman. He gets there and he looks through the glass. Wasn't she in some big denim jumper?
She was in a jumpsuit from top to bottom, a denim jumpsuit. And look, she was nothing like the picture.
That's just false advertising.
It was a long night because I couldn't just walk. And so I just basically
I did walk on a few of those.
Well, it's a good thing Tinder and the rest of these things went around.
No. I mean, this was clean stuff.
We'd all be in jail.
This is all harmless. Then I met. Then there was one person I actually went out with, and he was really smart. He was a Marine. And I went out with him. He was a little heavy. And I said, well, drop like 40 pounds and give me a call.
Ouch.
And so, and we kind of messaged each other, but we didn't get back together. A year later, after I'd already been dating someone else, I was in a car with a couple friends and one of their brothers. And he looks at me and he says, this guy, William, he looks at me and he says, you don't remember me, do you? Remember the guy you told to lose 40 pounds and give you a call? He said, I'm he and I lost 40 pounds. Okay. And I left you a message saying, give you a call. You never called. And I looked at him like, oh my God, it's you.
Wow.
And at the time I was dating his brother. Lee knows who I'm talking about.
I do.
And we scream, and he's my friend to this day. we scream laughing because he, you know how people look totally different?
But he dropped the 40.
He dropped the 40.
That's good,
and he's fit and he's smart and he's awesome. Speaking of awesome, Craig Shirley, Reagan biographer extraordinaire, old friend of mine. We go back to the Reagan days. That's how long we've known each other. And Craig has been one of the great, great guests on the Laura Ingraham Show. This is his intro music. This is what he always wanted as his intro music. Hey, Craig, how are you?
Hey, Laura, how are you?
I'm good.
It's like the last day of school, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. School
There's
and
stuffing teacher into lockers and holding keggers in the homeroom. And,
yeah,
it is.
It's kind of that that feeling, like you're all gonna go your separate ways. But it's good. It's a good time. You know, it's 17 years goes by fast. Wow.
Yeah, who's counting, right?
No, who's counting? So, Craig, why is it? And Reagan understood the power of radio. Reagan obviously is a radio broadcaster. That really that molded who he ended up becoming politically and philosophically.
Absolutely, so. He started out in radio as soon as he graduated from Eureka in 1936, and was a very popular local radio show host in Des Moines on two stations that still exist to this day, WRC and WHO, and. Of course, he did his weekly radio broadcast when he was president, which have been adopted as official policy by every president since. Every president since, I believe, still does. I believe Trump does, too, but the weekly Saturday radio broadcast. The power, he understood. You know, one time he was, after the 76 campaign, he was offered a $100,000 contract to do a weekly commentary on CBS with Walter Cronkite, and he turned it down. And Mike Deaver, his aide, was fit to be tied. And Reagan said, "People get used to seeing me, but they don't get bored of listening to my voice. So I'll just keep doing my radio broadcasts."
Well, that's why I'm still doing the podcasting, but just the 3 hours in the morning.
It shows
the
wisdom of Reagan at the time.
Yeah,
you know,
so I'm smart. You know, well, yeah. He understood that. Craig, it was important to bring you on, and I wanted you to, if you could, because this is a very short segment, unlike our normal segments, but you pointed out that I think it was it Time Magazine or Newsweek doing the tribute to Bush, H.W.,
yes.
Something was missing in that entire issue. Tell us.
Yes, it was the only mention of Reagan. There were a number of tributes by American journalists and scholars and historians. But the only one who mentioned Ronald Reagan was Mikhail Gorbachev, who also wrote a tribute in Time magazine. So it's just that's something that we find ourselves pushing back against all the time is that the establishment either trying to, and I'm not saying this came from the Bush family or anything like that, but I think that Time magazine is the very establishment publication, and pushing back against it, either trying to reinvent Ronald Reagan or eviscerate him, one or the other. But they will never accept Reagan for what he was.
Now, and today we mentioned to Mike Pompeo, well, all these CEOs say they're embarrassed of Trump. They go overseas and they're embarrassed. 75% of the ones who were surveyed said, no, we're embarrassed. We
you know
find
what?
Ourselves apologizing for America.
You know what? Who cares? You know, I mean, I don't care. I don't trust business executives anyway.
No.
So if they're embarrassed, it's probably because Trump is doing something correct. You know, they probably weren't embarrassed by Jimmy Carter, but he embarrassed the rest of us.
Well, and also they want to keep the status quo where you send production overseas, pay people slave wages in those internment camps where they're making that U.S. sports apparel. Disturbing
sure.
stuff we learned this week.
Yeah, doing business with the Soviets all during the Cold War, you know, is that Marx was right. Sell them the rope to hang themselves with. Marx was right about that.
Craig Shirley, thank you for all of your incredible work on this show over the years. You've been such an important voice. You'll continue to be an incredibly important voice as we move
There's
into.
No sound of flushing over here, you know.
Yeah, well, this he was flushing. I heard Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, but I have one question for you.
What?
All right, is that if you're giving up terrestrial radio? Does that mean you're becoming an extraterrestrial?
Yeah, exactly. E.T. in podcasting, for sure, and on TV. Craig Shirley, thank you so much for joining us here on the Laura Ingraham Show. Merry Christmas to Zarin and all the kids. We'll take a break. A big, big showdown the president's going to have, apparently, with the House Republicans on the spending bill today. But who wants to talk about that? Let's talk about more fun stuff. Don't go away. Joining us now, and I'm really happy he's with us, Brian Kilcommons. He's trained more than 35,000 dogs. You say that most dogs actually think their first name is No.
Right.
Why?
Because people run around every time the dog does something they don't like. They yell No. And instead of teaching the dog what we want, they wind up telling the dog what we don't want. And the word No is not a good word for dogs on the whole because there's not a clear ending. So you have some people going, No. And then you have other people bellowing, No! Mm-hmm. So it's pretty hard for the dogs to figure it out.
Mickey on line five. Mickey.
Well, hi. Hey, I've got a Jack Russell Terrier.
My condolences.
The Laura Ingram Show.
Unleash the hounds of hell.
Yeah.
The Laura Ingram Show.
Last segment, last show, first and last caller. All right, special guest line two. Who the heck is this? Hello? Hello?
Is this Laura Ingram?
Oh, Rush, how are you?
It's Laura Ingram. This has been like a Russian fire drill getting hold of you. Everybody wants to talk to you, and I finally found a way to worm my way in there.
Oh, well... How are you? If it weren't for you, I wouldn't have done this for 17 and a half years. You're the reason I'm doing it.
I'm doing great. I'm happy that you're moving on. I know you're doing what you want to do and what you're great at and so forth, but I just want you to know that everybody in radio is going to miss you.
Thank you. Well, it's bittersweet, you know. It's as you know, I mean, you've been doing it for how long? 30 years now?
30 years, yeah.
Wow. So it's like that. It is a blank. But then so many things happen, Rush. Then you forget them. Like, oh yeah, we did that. segment. But you were the reason, really. I ever did this. You started it all, and you're still there, and you're still making it happen every single day. And I guess I want to thank you for everything you've done for this country and everything you continue to do for the country every day, because people have their hair on fire. They freak out every time they lose a legislative battle and they think it's over or we've lost it all. And then you bring everybody back to center.
Well, you know, it's like they always say, if you love doing it, it isn't work. And I can't imagine doing something I didn't like for 30 years. So, but you know, Laura, I got to tell you something. I listen to you on the radio. I watch you on TV, and I have to be honest. Every time I do, I ask myself why we are not winning even bigger. You are that good. You are that persuasive, and you're that unique. And I don't mean to say that we're not winning. Don't misunderstand. But I when I listen to you, you sound so mainstream. You sound so common sense. You sound so. I mean, if anybody and everybody heard you, it would be a slam dunk that they would agree with you. And so it's confidence inspiring, and it's. You know, you inspire more people than you know. We all do, but you especially. And I didn't want to let your last show get away here without sharing those sentiments with you.
Well, Rush, thank you so much. It means an enormous amount to me. It's bittersweet. I don't want to get too sappy or emotional, but it's a tough send off.
Let me just, folks. She is not. Sip sappy, emotional, or whatever here. You're tough as nails when you need to be, but you are extremely sensitive, but never sappy.
No.
Never.
Rush, thank you. I hope I get to see you over the holidays. I'm going to be down your way if you're around, so hopefully I'll be able to see you if you're in town. But thanks for everything you continue to do, and you know, maybe on occasion we can collaborate on something down the road. But Rush Limbaugh, well, I really appreciate it.
Congratulations and all the best to you.
All right. Lots of love. Rush Limbaugh. Well, that's kind of a fitting way
We're finished here.
We're finished. All right. AJ and Lee, you can just
leave. No, Bono needs to call because Bono was on the show. Quincy Jones was on the show. We got to remember what we did.
Lionel Richie.
And my favorite, we know, Van Leer Rose, who comes into this studio all by herself, Loretta Lynn. Sits down with us for an hour.
And that was when entertainers weren't worried about coming in and talking to conservatives. Remember, Lee?
Yep.
They would do it because we're people. Yep. We're just people in the end. And Lee is telling his own stories on the radio every single day all across this country. AJ, you continue to do amazing work both on the PR front, and I hope we're going to see AJ a lot more. I'm working on something. Well, we're going to don't reveal that now. But James and Mike and Rich and all the people throughout the years, Matt Fox, Kevin Delaney, Billy?
Bart Tesler, and even Billy Pimble.
Billy Pimble, Bart Tesler, Joel Hollander for actually giving us that chance in radio, Don Imus, Bernie McGurk, who was my friend from the very beginning, Charles McCord, Paul Harvey, who I never met, but he inspired me. And one person no one will know, Bob Steele. You know why Bob Steele mattered? WTIC, local Hartford radio host who actually I listened to when I was a little girl, or little transistor radio. My mother sat in the kitchen on her stool every morning having her coffee, and Bob Steele's voice is what I remember from growing up. And it was a great privilege to actually talk to him once when I was in Hartford on the air, and it was wild. Everybody, catch me on the podcast, Podcast One. Find the podcast in the new year. Watch me on Fox. You've been the best. I love you all. Remember, we live in the greatest country in the face of the earth. Enjoy every minute of every day, because you don't know which one's going to be your last. I'm out.
Goodbye.